Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Sitting down in this chair, Eric and I were talking up to about 30 seconds ago about things on my mind. So, Eric, I'm going to throw a little curveball at you. I just had a story sent to me from Variety that Steve Nash is going to produce a movie about the origin of ecstasy. Of course he is. And that's that just pops up today. I have Steve Sarkisian acting like a complete fool and ripping on ASU in his own way. I've got fantasy football stuff all over the place. It's like Packer Nation is just losing their minds. But fantasy football players are saying, should I draft Aaron Rodgers now that he's lost Jordy Nelson? So Michael Fabiano will join us directly from the NFL Network, the Hall of Fame fantasy football analyst. He'll join us coming up at 10:20. We have news and notes with my friend Paula Bovin from AZ Central Sports at about 10:35. The Diamondbacks are only five back. They're only five out. And the Dodgers are in an absolute free fall. I've got Chris Carter saying one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And of course, he's saying it with his Hall of Fame jacket on with Warren Sapp laughing next to him. And, you know, the Cardinal game the other night, we sat here on Friday and said the number one thing is the offensive line. And, you know, the way that the game went, the very first play, Carson Palmer is lucky, in my opinion, that the safety coming off the edge just didn't light him up in a regular season game. Otherwise, I don't think Carson Palmer's here today. Because I thought he pulled back a little bit just watching it over and over. And DJ Humphries so far has been a disappointing first-round pick. There's no other way to put it. So other than that, there's nothing going on. Tiger have an absolute 500-pound anvil around his ankle being thrown off a pier yesterday. He was just dreadful. But people were watching. The numbers for Tiger Woods this weekend were amazing. So there's a lot happening. Let's get you caught up some of the things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Friday, I swung by Santan Ford after doing the show. I sat in Big Bad Lloyd Kovalt's office. Lloyd, one of the very good people over there, and we were chatting about how business is and just talking sports. After I left his office, I went over to Ann Pierce's office, known Ann through the years. She's terrific, a great friend, great fan. And we're talking about stuff going on, my son getting engaged while I was on the air Friday, and she was high-fiving me and all that. Saw Tim Hovick there buzzing around like a bee. That's what he does, getting deals done and all that. It's a busy place, but it's a place where it is all about the people. When they say it's all about you, that truly is what it's about. So you're in the market for a new car, new truck, certified pre-owned, whatever it may be. Stop into Santan Ford or shop online at santanford.com. That's Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista, Santan Ford, where it is all about you. I actually think the biggest story here locally is the Diamondbacks today. I'm not going to talk about preseason football and analyze backup left tackles for the show today. I'm going to do some of that, but it drives me nuts. This is more important. Here we are on August 24th, and they're five back of the Dodgers with 39 games to go. Now, the schedule for the Diamondbacks here recently, we had talked about this, that maybe I got in over my skis when I said back in March, 84 wins, and I wrote 84 wins, and I said over and over 84 wins, and I had people wanting to get me drug tested, and you know what you're talking about. And I may come up short. It's fine, but I put it out there. I'm not surprised. I'm not always, if you would have told me on the 24th that they'd be around 500, no, I'm not surprised by this. I'm not. Paul Goldschmidt's been healthy. Now, they're a game over 500 with St. Louis coming to town tonight. St. Louis, the best in all of baseball. St. Louis, just a model franchise. If the Diamondbacks could come anywhere as close to the St. Louis Cardinals in terms of year in and year out getting it done. But here we are with a big series. This is St. Louis in town for four games, and the Diamondbacks are five out. These are the types of series where you live for this. And if you may be a football fan, you may be a fan of anything, but if you've not paid attention to the baseball team, they are fun. They are entertaining. David Peralta has just been on fire. He had a couple four hits and a three hit game over the weekend. And he's just been knocking the cover off the ball. I get it. The Reds pitching stinks. It's fine. But Peralta has been terrific. Castillo hit his 14th home run as a Diamondback since they acquired him in yesterday's game. There's a couple things of interest today in my mind. So Paul Goldschmidt, a couple of home runs on Saturday, but his wife, okay, and I respect this. This is one of those age-old debates sitting behind microphones. Here the Diamondbacks are five back of the Dodgers And Paul Goldschmidt may not be in the lineup the next couple days. His wife, Amy, is scheduled to give birth any day now for the couple's first child. So in my mind, you go and be with your wife for the birth of that first child. You have to go do that. And if you miss games, even though your team is right on the cusp of being in a race, if you don't think they're in a race, if you're one of those, oh, the Dodgers are going to pull away, I don't know. They look like they're just spinning their wheels. And Clayton Kershaw got on his team yesterday. Puig got thrown out of the game in Houston yesterday. But man, St. Louis here tonight with Robbie Ray on the mound. The other bit of news today is the Diamondbacks this morning brought back Archie Bradley, at least from the disabled list. So we've been talking, I talked to Pedro last week about how close is Archie Bradley, and it's been one of the great unknowns. And they sent him down to Reno. Now, am I just making too much out of this? Are the Diamondbacks looking at it like, you know what? We go on a little bit more of a win streak and we become 3-2 back. Maybe we should be adding somebody late in the season, or is it just simply, Archie's ready to go, let's get him moving? I tend to think it's the former rather than the latter. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. And for Chip Hale, look, I know manager of the year is going to go to AJ Hinch. I know that that's going to happen, but I do think if you look at the body of work that what Chip Hale has done, you have to look top to bottom and say he's been one of the best managers in all of baseball this year. This team has not quit. This team has not folded their tents. You know, this team didn't do anything major at the trade deadline. He's got a bunch of kids that go out there and pitch. One day Chase Anderson is sent down. The next day Chase Anderson is back up. So I'm really geeked about this series with St. Louis tonight, and I hope that the community's involved in this because we haven't had this in a while. Yeah, it's St. Louis. They should come here and kick the doors off the Diamondbacks and sweep them out. And before you know it, you're 9 back again. Okay, season over. But you're sitting here at 5 back, and if you just play them even, you know, I'm just saying, this is a lot of fun. The college football end of things over the weekend, the AP poll came out, which to me is worthless, but some fans get all wound up about that. I don't mean to ruin your parade or rain on it, but who knows if ASU is the 15th best team in the nation, or that U of A is the 23rd best team in the nation, or that it's worth talking about how my team is ranked ahead of your team and all that stuff. Again, I don't care. I have no dog in the fight. I didn't go to ASU, I didn't go to U of A, so I don't care. What I do care about is Steve Sarkisian. So Steve Sarkisian is the head coach of the USC Trojans. If you missed it over the weekend, Steve Sarkisian, who, by the way, I don't believe that either coaching staff here in Arizona fears going against USC as long as Steve Sarkisian is the coach. I don't think there's any fear of going against him. Last year, they lost 2 games on the final play of the game. They got lucky down in Tucson last year to win, miss kick. I'm not banging on him. It's just there's not a fear of what's going on over at SC. And while Sarkisian has been able to get the program through all of the loss of scholarships in the Pete Carroll era, last night, it's just a short clip. This was Saturday night, actually. This started showing up late Saturday night. There was an event that they have. It's their big event that they have every year at USC, the Salute to Troy event. So this is big, bad USC, very stodgy. We're all that. We go to USC. We haven't figured out. That's fine. So this is your coach. Okay, watch this little clip. This is your coach on stage. Get ready to bleep and fire out. Yeah, that's your coach. He's completely hammered. He's bleep-faced in front of everybody.
Kids, alums,
cheerleaders,
parents.
Pat Hayden.
I was about to say, and your AD who signs your check every 2 weeks.
Who is probably one of the most conservative people that's out there. So this is before your season starts. Slurring words, quote, "Our whole team is embarrassed," said a source who added the athletic director Pat Hayden had to intervene and was seen berating Sarkisian backstage afterwards. The source said Sarkisian disparaged USC opponents, saying they, quote, "all suck," including going to Oregon, ASU, and Notre Dame. So now Arizona State's involved in this. Look, I'm not one of those that sits there and gets all wound up about bulletin board material. I can't see Todd Graham on Saturday night saying, "get me that video, and we're going to show it in front of my kids." I can't see him doing it, but I can certainly see a lot of people around him saying, "we have to show this to our kids." whatever it takes to get 19 and 20 and 21-year-olds wound up. If you're the alums, if you're the donors, there's probably some of those alums and donors that think that that behavior is great.
That's what I want out of my coach. I want my coach to call it as he sees it. This is a big deal about nothing. Oh, that's great. I was pounding some back with him.
Really? This is what you want at USC. So, Pat Aiden, this is Sarkisian. Pat Aiden talked to me after the event about my actions, and I assured him this will not happen again. Yeah. Good luck with that. This won't happen again. So, evidently, last year he got a little wound up. But you just kind of look at SC and Pat Aiden and say, this is not a good fit. You just kind of, Eric, am I overstating this? This just feels like this is the beginning of the end for SC.
He could be the Norv Turner of college coaches, a very, very good coordinator, but not equipped to be a heavyweight head coach.
Because there's nobody really that I've come across that has said, wow, we really fear him as a coach. They say he's a great recruiter. They've said that. He's a great recruiter. To which my response is, I don't know. If it's, hey, come here to USC and we'll give you a University of Spoiled Children education, as some like to say, I don't call him that, but that's what's out there.
And look at the Pac-12, Brad. I mean, honestly, Todd Graham, Rich Rodriguez, Jim Mora, Chris Peterson, there are tons of great recruiters. Like, right. Everyone in the Pac-12 is a good recruiter.
If you're Jim Mora and you had to put up with a player of note recently and his dad on high profile, mm-hmm. So you get thrown under the bus a little bit. Now you're USC and he's slobbering all over himself up on stage. And you're Todd Graham. Do you walk out there and say, you know, we are about character. We're about pride. We're about left lane hammer down. We are all about having your young man come here. Or you could go over there with USC and throw one back with Mr. Sarkisian and you make the decision. This stuff all adds up. We're going to get into Chris Carter a little bit later on. One of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And also the Cardinals preseason game. Some thoughts on that front. Steve Nash going to the Ring of Honor. But Steve Nash producing a movie about the origin of ecstasy. I think Paula will be all over that in about 15 minutes. Up next, fantasy football from the NFL Network with Michael Fabiano. He joins me every week. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Michael Fabiano joins us now. 17 days till the regular season starts. The NFL Network's Hall of Famer, the man, the myth, the legend. He joins us to talk about Jordy Nelson. My inbox just filled up immediately with Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams questions. What about the draft status of Aaron Rodgers? So let's just sift through the loss of Jordy Nelson, also Kelvin Benjamin. Let's start with Nelson.
Yeah, that's huge because this was a guy who was tied for second in fantasy points among all wide receivers last year. One of the most talented players, not only in the league, but in fantasy land at the wide receiver position. And now, Brad, you've lost two top 20 fantasy wide receivers from a year ago in Benjamin and Nelson. Now, with Nelson out, Devontae Adams is now a potential number two fantasy wide receiver. Goes from being a late round flyer to being worth as much as maybe a fifth or sixth round pick. And a lot of that is talent. A lot of that is Aaron Rodgers. Now, if we move to Rodgers, consider him still one of the two elite quarterbacks in fantasy, along with Andrew Luck. But mm-hmm. I moved Rodgers down one spot. He was my number one. Now he's my number two. Luck moves into that top spot. Rodgers and Luck, to me, not worth anything more than a third-round pick. But you know me. I wait on quarterbacks. So I would assume that Luck will probably be a first or second round in a lot of drafts. Maybe Rodgers is right there. But it hurts Rodgers' value. It doesn't decimate it like sure. Benjamin's loss in Carolina really took a shot at Cam Newton's value. So Rodgers is still an elite fantasy quarterback.
Okay, we had a lot of questions about the rest of the crew there in Green Bay. Randall Cobb, even Ty Montgomery mm-hmm. and Jarvis. So sort through those names, and if you see value in those players given the Nelson injury.
Well, Montgomery's now worth a late flyer as long as he can hold off Jeff Janis on the depth chart. And Cobb was a top 10 fantasy wide receiver last year. Unless he gets hurt this year, he'll be right back there. I don't know if he's going to see a massive increase in targets, but he he's certainly now the number one guy in that offense. And so, barring injuries, he's a virtual lock for over 1,000 yards and double-digit touchdowns. And I'm looking at him as a second-round pick now, whereas before he was maybe more of a third-round pick. He has certainly seen his stock rise, not tremendously because he was pretty awesome last year, let's put it that way, but it certainly has risen a little bit with the loss of Nelson.
The Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network with us for a couple of minutes. Kelvin Benjamin, take us through that injury. You talked about Newton, but what happens in Carolina?
I really liked Cam Newton as a potential draft bargain because of what he failed to do last year, and that was score fantasy points on a consistent basis. He's healthy this year, but now he loses Benjamin, and I really think it's tough to expect Devin Funchess to come in and replace Benjamin and the 1,000-plus yards and 9 touchdowns he scored last year. So I moved Cam down from number 6 to number 9. I'm just worried about that passing game. Yes, he's got Greg Olsen, but behind him, you're looking at a rookie in Funchess. You're looking at Corey Brown. You're looking at Jericho Cotchery, a lot of guys who aren't elite talents like Kelvin Benjamin appeared to have been last year at times. So Cam's now a guy that you can draft as a QB1, but he's certainly not someone you're going to be able to lean on as a QB1 unless he runs the ball a whole heck of a lot. So still a QB1, but not in the top 6 anymore. More of a guy that fits into that strategy of, hey, I want to wait on a quarterback, so I will sit back and maybe target Cam Newton in round 10, somewhere in that area, but I would not reach for him.
Let's go to the mailbag. A lot of questions about Brian Hoyer being named the guy in Houston without Arian Foster. Do you see value in Brian Hoyer?
I don't. I really think it's much ado about nothing, because whether it was Mallett or whether it was Hoyer, Arian Foster has been lost for maybe half the season, and DeAndre Hopkins was going to be a number 2 fantasy wide receiver regardless. It doesn't increase his value. It doesn't decrease it either, to be quite honest with you. Neither one of these quarterbacks has proven to be elite by any stretch of the imagination. Hoyer's probably more of a game manager, more experienced, maybe less prone to turnovers, so that's a good thing for the Texans offense. But I don't know that it makes a huge difference in fantasy land. Mallett, Hoyer, whoever it was not going to be draftable in most leagues anyway.
Steven Awatuki, Ryan Fitzpatrick or Tyrod Taylor? Tyrod Taylor making a push here. That's going deep here, but
right now I'm going with the Amish rifle, but I don't know what's going on with Taylor in terms of his status as the number one quarterback. Matt Castle is still in that mix. I don't think EJ Manuel is at this point, but if Taylor gets the nod, he's going to be interesting because he can run with the football, and that's always an added value from a quarterback. But right now, I'd have to say Fitzpatrick.
Jimmy Garoppolo, what is Fabiano's view on Jimmy Garoppolo? This came from a lot of fans.
He's going to be valuable, I think, in the first few weeks as a daily fantasy option because I'm guessing that he's going to be a value. The issue with Garoppolo is that you're only going to get 4 games out of him. I don't care if he throws for 400 yards a game. Tom Brady is the quarterback once he comes back. And one of his matchups is really tough playing Buffalo. That defense is no joke. And he's got Pittsburgh in week 1. I believe he's got the Cowboys and the Jaguars also in those 4 games. So maybe a matchup-based starter, but I always say it, the quarterback position is so deep, I don't really think you need to be reaching for a guy who's only going to give you 4 games. There are other quarterbacks out there that I would much rather have. In fact, there's probably 20 at least that I would rather have than Garoppolo during the course of the season.
Tony in Tucson, Matt Jones or Chris Ivory?
Chris Ivory, because he's going to be the guy in New York right now. Stephen Ridley still coming off of the ACL repair. And Ivory could end up being a decent draft bargain. I mean, I've seen him go in the 8th or 9th round. I mean, he was a top 25 fantasy running back last year. He was inconsistent, but he still had some decent weeks. And again, it looks like he's the guy. Matt Jones, he showed some explosion for a big dude in the Redskins' last preseason game. But, I mean, Alfred Morris is there, so he's going to have a hard time equaling the value of Chris Ivory.
Allen Robinson in Jacksonville or Charles Johnson in Minnesota? Man, I'm getting some questions here that are pretty deep.
I'm loving Allen Robinson. Really good dude, and he was starting to flash a little bit last year before he got hurt, and he's looked good in the preseason. He is clearly the number one wide receiver, and at quarterback you've got Blake Bortles, who's got a year of experience under his belt. So Jacksonville has been sort of a joke in fantasy the last few years, but this year you've got some talent there. I mean, you've got Robinson, you've got T.J. Yeldon there, you've got Bortles there, Julius Thomas comes in, although I don't love him in fantasies, an upgrade over Mercedes Lewis as a pass catcher.
The Detroit running back situation, you had some questions about Zach Zenner along with everybody else up there. I know we've talked about Abdullah and Joik Bell and Riddick. Where do you put Zenner in all this?
I don't put him anywhere, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I don't even know if he's going to make the team. I go three deep there, Theo Riddick being third. Amir Abdullah is a guy I love. You know that. We've talked about him. Joik Bell has been injured, has not done anything but open the door for the rookie to come in and potentially make an impact. So Amir Abdullah I've seen drafted as high as the fourth round. I think that's a little too rich for my blood. But fifth or sixth round pick, I lean more towards a sixth round pick with Abdullah in a 10-team league. Joik Bell, right now, maybe you take a ninth round pick on him, but that's it. He hasn't done anything all offseason, and Abdullah is stealing his thunder.
Before I let you go, John Brown over here, getting questions about that, and the Eagles'
love
backfield.
Him.
Those are the two
you
biggest ones I'm getting. Yeah, you love John Brown.
Man, I love him. And Palmer's got something going on. Those two got something going on. You know, Palmer back in the day with Cincinnati had something going on with Ocho Cinco, TJ Houshmandzadeh. Maybe he's developing something here with John Brown. I've predicted this in the past on the show that he'll be the best fantasy wide receiver in Arizona this year. I really like him. He could stretch the defense, and Palmer has a lot of trust in him. In terms of the Eagles running backs, if you watched that game this past week, you saw that Murray and Matthews are going to split carries. Not 50-50, but there's going to be some sort of split in the touches out of that backfield. So I'm really hesitant to draft Murray as anything more than an RB2. Matthews could have some standalone flex starter value, but if you watched in some of those series, when they got in the red zone, Matthews was getting the first crack. And actually, Matthews scored the first touchdown as a runner out of the backfield. And then the second time they got down there, Matthews was in there for a couple of snaps, couldn't get it in. Then they brought in DeMarco, and he punched it in for the score. And that's going to be the issue with that Eagles backfield. There's going to be times when DeMarco's going to be in that backfield the whole drive. They get inside the 20, they pull him, they bring in Matthews, and vice versa. It's going to happen more often than you like. So as much as I love DeMarco, being a Cowboys fan, and I know DeMarco, he's a great dude, and I hope he has a lot of success in Philadelphia, except for when he plays the Cowboys. I just don't see his production equaling what he did last year, and I'm talking about like a 100-point drop compared to 2014.
Wow. Before I let you go, what are you looking at this week in the games coming up, or you still need to get answered here? What are like the top two, three things in your mind in fantasy?
Well, this is the big week, right? I mean, week three, you've got a lot of players who are going to be drafted playing a half, maybe a little bit more. So definitely want to look at what's going on with the Atlanta backfield because Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman haven't really done anything yet. They've been injured. I'm waiting to see Duke Johnson. He's a guy that I really like as a deeper sleeper. Say that 10 times fast.
Deeper sleeper.
You got it. That's only three. So, I'm thinking Duke is someone that I really want to keep tabs on and see how he progresses. Amari Cooper is another guy that I want to be watching. Melvin Gordon missed the last game. I want to see what he can do. I want to see if Cam Newton can do anything with Devin Funchess in there because Funchess missed a game. So there's actually quite a bit. You could probably ask me to give you one situation per team, and I can give you two because that's what this third preseason week means. There's a lot of stuff. It's a dress rehearsal for the regular season, and it's when you're going to start seeing depth charts sort of become solidified.
Thanks, Michael, as always.
All right, my brother. Take care.
You got it, pal. There's Michael Fabiano with us right there on the set at the NFL Network. He joins us every week. We're back with more after this timeout. Paula Bovin joins us now, AZ Central Sports columnist. She is at Arizona State, the football team getting ready right around the corner for Texas A&M. Of course, U of A right around the corner with Stephen F. Austin. Let's start, though, out of town, away from both those programs. Steve Sarkisian, Saturday night at a fundraiser. What do you make out of what's going on with Steve Sarkisian and the big blow-up out there?
Yeah, it was embarrassing. I mean, it was absolutely embarrassing for USC. And when you're in that position, a high-profile program, and you are speaking to boosters or whoever was in that room, it doesn't matter if you don't think people are recording it or there's cameras. How can you be drunk? How is someone at that position and that level of success be drunk? And that, you know, based on the apology that was sent out, it sure sounds like that was the case. I just thought it was embarrassing for USC, and there were red flags before they hired him. And I just wondered, you know, I think a lot of people are sort of wondering what's gone through Pat Hayden's head here.
No, there's no question about it, Paula. Last year he lost two games on the final play, got lucky to beat U of A last year in Tucson, and I don't sense anybody at ASU or U of A that is afraid to play against and coach against Steve Sarkisian.
No, not at all. And, you know, and the fact that he also was ripping ASU among other programs, even if he was drunk, I mean, bottom line, there, you just gave them more fodder. They can pretend like they don't care, ASU or Notre Dame and everybody else that he mentioned. They care, and that's just another black eye for that program. And it's really surprising at the direction SC has gone, because I really thought Pat Hayden, once he came aboard, they were kind of heading in the right direction. And I have so much respect for that guy, but I question that hire.
He's Essential Sports columnist Paula Bovin with us on campus at Arizona State. Okay, so the feeling you're getting about the matchup with Texas A&M, the Aggies are not ranked in the preseason top 25 that came out yesterday. Arizona State ranked 15th. I think that's about right. What is the feeling on campus about this game?
Just as much excitement as I've seen for an opener. And, you know, and part of the reason, Brad, is, you know, when we've seen openers in a lot of times in the past here at ASU, they've been, you know, schools that you just don't get excited about. They're smaller schools, soften the schedule. It's rare for them to open with this high-profile game. And even if, you know, Texas A&M isn't ranked, it's obviously still a great program with a lot of good kids from Texas who produce, you know, the best high school players in the country. So I have people ask me all the time, you know, what time is the game? When's it start?
Mm-hmm.
I think I can still get tickets. And there's a lot of enthusiasm.
No, and we're going, and I know you'll be there too and doing
right.
Your thing. And the other side of it is Arizona does not have a week off. Once they start, Rich Rodriguez does not have a week off. He gave his team, they dismissed him early, and they were all hyperventilating and jumping up and down and being kids on Thursday. I'm sure you saw the video, but who's going to have more wins as we start this season from your view? Will it be U of A or will it be ASU this year? What's your expectation?
Wow, it's a great question. You know, just based, I've seen more ASU practices and talked to more players. I haven't been down to U of A very much. I'd have to say ASU, simply because I really believe they're going to win this opener. I just think that they're in a good place where Graham has got this team mentally. You know, it all hinges on, I think, Berkovici staying healthy, because I think that's a scary thing about ASU right now is their backup quarterback situation. But I just feel like he has them at a level where they're going to beat Texas A&M, and then they've got some easier matchups coming up. So I think they're going to start out pretty darn strong.
If ASU beats Texas A&M and they go through their next two, Cal Poly and New Mexico, then you look at them and say, they could be in a spot where the USC-UCLA games, where they could be top seven, top eight. You win those games, you're top two, top three in the nation. You lose the game to Texas A&M, you fall into the mid-20s, and you're swimming upstream for the rest of the year. So it's an enormous game and a great opportunity to catapult them into uncharted territory.
Yeah, it's a great point, Brad. I think for a couple of reasons. One, you're right. If they lose, I think the whole dynamic of the season changes for fans. You know, you don't get that sort of energy base, and they'll still be out there, but it'll be a whole different thing. Second, I mean, the talk about the media attention, I think if they win that game, you know, a number 15 team beating a team that's not ranked but was very close to being ranked, and they did it in Texas and everything else. I think that could be just great energy, national media attention, the fan base, everything. It would be a really good thing for this program.
Before I let you go, about 45 seconds on the Cardinals, two games into the preseason. Their offensive line was scary at best the other night. I'm concerned. What about you?
I am. And, you know, part of it is they've had to make some last-minute adjustments to the line. So I agree. That was scary. The other thing that stopped me, I don't know this for a fact, but I just sense something different about Bruce Arians. He seems more stressed out on the sidelines, and I know he always kind of goes at the officials. I'm just wondering if this whole situation with the injuries, or there are other things that are worrying him about this team. That's something I'm going to pay attention to, because it just seems a little bit more intense than even I remember him the last few years.
When the hat comes off, that's not good for Bruce Arians.
Never good. It's a sign of frustration.
Sure, sure. And when he says the referees need more than four preseason games to get their act together, he said some things that were interesting the other night. He crushed DJ Humphries, their first-round pick. So I do agree with you. There's some stuff there.
Yeah, no question. But, you know, then he got David Johnson motivated by his concerns. So there's something to him calling guys out. I think it worked.
Thanks, Paula, as always.
All right, Brad.
There's Paula Bovin with us, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist around the college and pro front on the football scene. Back with more after this timeout. So just after we said goodbye to Paula, it comes out that Kyle Allen has been named the starting quarterback for Texas A&M against Arizona State. This is not breaking news, but the former Desert Mountain High School star we've had on the show many times has been in a quarterback competition, and the starting assignment has been given to him against the Sun Devils, only adding to the intrigue. Eric, you're close with Kyle Allen and the family. You've got like some in. You've never said what it is. I don't know. Is it they own property of yours, or what is
no,
the deal?
No, just friends from the past. When you work in this business, Brad, you meet people that you grow fond with, and we've just I've
and not
always
so fond
just,
of.
Of course, yeah. I've always just stayed in touch with Kyle's dad, Mike.
Yeah,
and I've seen. You know, I remember I first met Kyle, and he was just a little kid, and now he's going to be a sophomore, and he's 6'3", 215 pounds, and he's under the big glaring spotlight at Texas A&M. So. And I know between he and Christian Kirk, there's going to be a little extra motivation playing ASU, and likewise for ASU, because ASU wanted both those guys pretty bad.
Yeah. So I'm expecting like the big blowout piece of you living in his dorm for 24 hours and making him dinner. And...
No. I leave him alone.
You have access.
He's got enough people like us trying to pick at him.
You have access.
Right. He's been gracious enough to give us some time, though, in the offseason. I appreciate it.
So. That's true. So that just came out. Let's go over to Chris Carter. So if you missed this over the weekend, and remember when Chris Borland retired, he announced his retirement, the linebacker from the 49ers, and he made a reference about something that he saw that was really uncomfortable. Well, there was some digging around, and this was at the Rookie Symposium last year, where Chris Carter, the Hall of Famer, who is part of the ESPN network families and has been rising there, doing more stuff on their morning show with Mike and Mike, and you know all this stuff. And Chris Carter had his issues off the field when he was a player, and he got them straightened out, turned out to be a terrific player. But you have to understand the context of this piece of video we're about to show you. This is Chris Carter along with Warren Sapp, the same Warren Sapp that was arrested here in the Valley for soliciting a prostitute during the Super Bowl week. And this was a year and a half ago, at the NFL Rookie Symposium. Now, at the time of this video, he said what he said, and the NFL kept it up on their own website for the last year and a half, and they just took it down this weekend, which to me says they fully endorse what Chris Carter was telling the rookies. Understand, this is a Hall of Famer telling kids, giving them advice, all these draft picks. Now watch this video and tell me what you think. Okay, so I thought when Chris Carter when he said you have to have a fall guy, immediately was like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? One of you guys who I'm rolling the watch and the cars and all that, you've got to be the one that gets arrested to protect me. And so this comes out, and tonight there's a Monday night game on ESPN, and it's widely being reported that Chris Carter is going to have an apology of some sort, but are you serious? I mean, and with Warren Sapp sitting up there, and the NFL knew about this. It's on their own website, and then they take it down over the weekend. You know, for a company that has this, we're the biggest and the baddest ever. When stuff like this falls through the cracks, this is not a minor thing. This is, guys, make sure you know how to skirt around things. Make sure you get a fall guy. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How about just disassociate yourself from people? So that caught my eye. Steve Nash is going into the Suns Ring of Honor on October 30th. I think it's terrific. Steve Nash should go into the Ring of Honor. This is a great honor and a great moment for the organization. It's at the start of the year. At the same time, Steve Nash today puts out on Twitter that he's going to produce a movie about the origin of ecstasy. They've signed a direct, untitled, independent film exploring the origins of the global rave movement in the 80s during the era of legal ecstasy, known as Molly. And Steve Nash is going to be working on the production of it. Now, I'm fine with this. It's a historical story, and some people will be very, very uncomfortable with it, but it's not a surprise. I mean, when I see Steve Nash doing a movie on ecstasy, I'm not surprised. I'm not rolling my eyes saying, oh, my gosh. Guy's a deep thinker. And it was back in the 80s. I'm very interested in seeing how this works out. We're going to have Simeon Rice with us later this week, who's come up with his own movie that he's put together and directed. I think this is all very, very good stuff. But it will cause some waves with some people. But Steve is now part of this production. Legal ecstasy in the 1980s Dallas scene fueled a social phenomenon. I'm reading from the release. In places such as gay discotheques, yuppie house gatherings, and Southern Methodist University frat parties. The movement vanished after ecstasy became illegal in 1985. So he's going back to that 80s realm. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmatt.